Welcome to the Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. Larry is the author of over 40 books, the founder of Dove International, a worldwide family of churches and ministries in six continents, and has over 50 years of leadership experience. He and his guests will share inspirational leadership insights from their journey with God. These insights, gleaned from serving leaders in many nations, will transform your life and leadership. For more information on Larry's books and resources, visit LarryKreider.com.
Welcome to the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Larry Kreider here. With me in the studio today is my friend Dave Evans. Dave, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here.
Yeah, man, you have helped so many people already in leadership, and you've got quite a leadership story. I think I've known you for about 2 years already, and I've been so impressed with what God's done in your life and through you. So let's just jump right in.
Great.
Okay, let's talk. I want you to talk to me about some of the roles in leadership, key roles in leadership you've had over the years, and including your present role. You train leaders. You train leaders around the world. I feel honored to have you on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much.
So go ahead and talk to me. Talk to us about your roles. Obviously, there's people around the world. I mean, you're a global person. You understand how that works. And there are people from around the world who are listening to this podcast. So
yes.
Talk to us about leadership.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, Larry, is that there are really two forms of leadership. There's informal leadership and formal leadership. And I've held a lot of formal leadership roles, particularly in the latter part of my life.
Yeah.
But when I think about leadership, I think about the times where I really, when I was younger, just started to grow in leading others in small ways. And I think that's maybe encouraging to the listeners here that everyone leads.
Right.
Whether you're a formal leader or you're an informal leader, you're leading in some way. And so, you know, I think back to when I was in school once, I got the lead role in the play Peter Pan. So I was Peter Pan himself.
Wow.
And I remember just, you know, a lot of my castmates being unable to learn their lines, being fearful, being a bit anxious. And I took on this role of informally helping everybody to be great at what they were doing. So I think I saw early on that I always had this desire to help others win.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's the informal start. And the formal, the formal leadership roles are, at the age of 31, that was the first time where I really formally led other people in a supervisory role. And Susan and I were newly married, my wife, and we moved to the country of Chad. And I became the country director of Food for the Hungry Chad.
Wow.
And I was only 31 years old. So it was a large responsibility. Now, I had lived in the country of Chad for about 5 years before that.
Okay.
So I spoke the languages. New Chadian culture. But I'd say, you know, that was my start in it. Leading international people in the country of Chad. Became the country director in Bolivia, where I was over 150 staff.
Wow.
I was a senior director of international operations, where I oversaw 2,000 people were under me. Now, I only had about six or seven direct reports, but under them were others cascading down to 2,000. I've been a vice president three times, and I've been a president twice.
Wow.
The presidential role was Food for the Hungry, where I was over the entire organization for several years. And then most recently, before I started my consulting firm 3 years ago, I was the president of LifeNet International. So these were all leadership roles internationally. I led in many, many different countries, as well as in the U.S., in the U.S. offices of Food for the Hungry, World Vision, and LifeNet International.
And talk about what you do today.
Yes. So what I do today is in 2022, I transitioned to become a consultant. I was at a point in LifeNet International as the president where I was really feeling the Lord saying he wanted me to move toward, you know, helping many other people. And so I thought, well, I need to do this in a way where there's some financial income coming into our family. I was 62 at the time. I didn't need to work full time. I moved to a half-time role and then I sort of hung out my shingle. And what I do is, what I have done is helping other leaders. So it's mentoring and coaching.
Right.
Oftentimes it's mid-level leaders, which has been really exciting in a number of different non-governmental, nonprofit organizations. And then most recently, I've taken on a fractional leadership role. There's a whole area called fractional leadership out there where I might come in as an interim vice president and serve for a time. And that's what I'm actually doing right now in an organization called Hope Walks, which actually treats and cures clubfoot in children in 14 countries in the developing world.
Wow.
The home office is over in Adams County, just a few counties away in Pennsylvania. And so I get to the office once a month, and then I work from my home. And I'm really on a one-year contract to help mid-level leaders to be able to grow in their roles.
Sure.
I'm very excited about that current role I have.
As you look back, what are some steps that God took you through to get you to where you're at today?
Wow, so many steps. I think part of it really starts with, it all starts really with a calling that God gave me when I was 18 and I was in college. I wasn't a believer in Jesus. I had grown up in the church, but had fallen away and was not living for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And there was this miraculous set of events where I became a committed believer in Jesus Christ, committed follower of Jesus in university in my freshman year. And 3 days later, Larry, I was walking across campus and I saw a sign on a building that said, "Help End World Hunger."
Wow.
And I looked at that and I said, wow, it's at a church. I'm a Christian now. I better go see what this is all about.
Wow.
I showed up there on a Friday night. It was about all these world-renowned speakers on Christian world-renowned speakers and world hunger were there. And I left on a Sunday afternoon, and I distinctly remember this 47 years later. I distinctly remember God saying, "This is what I want you to do with your life."
Mm.
And so I really had this strong call. And then the next year after that, I got a chance to go to Haiti. It was my first developing country that I ever went to. And it just snowballed from there. I served in Mennonite Central Committee in Burkina Faso and Chad and many other organizations that led to a lot of leadership roles. But it really goes back to that calling of ending world hunger, which then led to doing it in the field myself as an agricultural technician and doing water works. But then more importantly, how could I multiply other leaders? And so that God led me into that leadership role of really always with this idea of, I'm here to multiply leaders. I'm not here to just suck up all the oxygen in the room so no one else can breathe.
Yeah.
I'm here to actually maybe be like the sun that creates photosynthesis that allows people to grow. So that's the way I see leadership.
Yeah, and you do that well. Talk a bit more about it. You said when you were young, you had some Christian connection, and then God really got your heart later on.
Yes.
Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so I grew up in northern Pennsylvania. The city of Scranton is where I grew up.
Wow.
And we moved, I think I was 10 years old. We were church-going family. It was a Methodist church. It was theologically liberal, so I wasn't hearing the gospel necessarily.
Right.
But it was an amazing church, amazing foundation. I remember Sunday school and VBS there and learning the 23rd Psalm and all of the and learning the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
But it was when I was at the age of 10, my mother had a real conversion experience at a swim club. The woman next to her on the lawn chair next to her brought her to Christ. And our entire family started to go to an evangelical church. And then, you know, at that young age, I was really attracted. I remember learning Bible verses.
Wow.
Many of them I still remember in King James.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes when I quote verses, I'm King James, right? I don't even, because that's the first ones I learned. But then unfortunately, you know, middle school, high school, I got involved with the wrong crowd.
Yeah.
And I was actually even an instigator and a leader in that crowd.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I was being, you know, drawn away by others. I was going down that road myself. But the Lord brought me back when I got to college. And I think that's the exciting part is just, you know, God is so faithful. He loves us. Many people have prodigal journeys, sometimes more than one prodigal journey.
Right.
But the Lord is so faithful to bring us back, and He did, and has used me in many ways, despite my faults and brokenness.
Yeah. So you see God use you in leadership training and mentoring, et cetera, many nations, parts of the world, many organizations. But as you look back, what are some things you wish you would have known earlier, or known maybe when you started?
Yeah.
Especially leadership kinds of stuff.
Right. Thanks. That's a great question. I think, thinking about this, the biggest thing I wish I knew earlier, not so much knowledge is one thing, but then actually believing it, living it, and practicing it. That's so it's all of those things. I think I probably knew a little bit about this, but I had a hard time living it out, I think, based on how I operated. And that is this principle of working through a team. And actually, you can accomplish so much more through a team than you can yourself. That's I was always a self-starter and a self-doer. And so I struggled with delegating and working through others. So I think that is the biggest principle that I learned over time, trying to live it out every day now in, this period that I'm in of mentoring and coaching younger leaders in many different organizations, including Hope Walks. Is really just living that out. So how can I help my teammates be successful, even more successful than I am? And if I can give you an example, just really quickly, is I think sports is a great way to learn teamwork, and particularly team sports like basketball and cycling. I love cycling right now. I'm a competitive cyclist, and I ride with clubs, with groups of people. But basketball in particular, the best basketball players are not the ball hogs. They're not the ones that go down and shoot every time. Those teams never make it to the finals. They never win the NBA championship. It's like the Oklahoma City Thunder with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who just won the championship. In the last game that he was playing in, and he in the past has been a ball hog, but now he really opened it up and said, I've got to pass the ball more. And because he passed the ball, he had 15 assists in the last game. They won that game. So it's all about how do I pass the ball so that my teammates can score when I'm not open. And that's where you win games. And that's how you, that's how I love team leadership and really delegating to others and working like a team.
What are some things you do that helps you become a better leader, or things you've done that helps you become a better leader?
I think first and foremost is just a posture of humility before the Lord. It's like, Lord, you know, help me to stay humble. I really feel like leadership can be a huge trap around power and then control that you have. And leaders feel like they got to have this big lever to drive something, you know. And I, once you feel like you need this big lever that you're pushing on, you lose your humility. So I think part of it is, Lord, help me to stay humble. That's one. I think the other is a lot of reading. I confess that I don't read as much as I used to. And part of that, I think, is just the smartphone device world we live in. But, you know, starting with forget his name now, John, he's the famous guy, but anyway, I'll think of his name otherwise, Patrick Lencioni, overcoming the five dysfunctions of a team, you know, just a number of different key leaders, John Maxwell. So just a number of particularly Christian leaders who really, really have great principles of their teaching and examples of how it works. So I would say that's where I learned a lot. But then it's really about practice. You know, what am I seeing with my team? Are my are the people that are on my team, those working under me, those in my organization, are they excited? Do they, you know, or do they have like fear in their face when they come to talk to me? If they have fear in their face when they come to talk to me, then I'm doing something wrong as a leader. So I think it's just all of those things combined.
Have you made any mistakes?
No, not a one.
And that's amazing.
Absolutely.
You're the first person I've met who said that.
Me and Jesus.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Tons. I think the biggest really is around this whole thing of not invest in my early leadership. You know, often being the first to speak when I should have said, how do you feel about that to those around me, particularly those who report to me? How do you feel about this? How would you do this? You know, I always felt like I had to be the one with the answers, right? I had to be the one that was always like leading the charge. And I think that was a mistake in some ways. I even probably lost some staff along the way who just said, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else because, you know, I'm not getting enough from Dave to be able to grow. So I say that, you know, a bit sad, but everybody makes mistakes. The other thing is early on in my leadership in Food for the Hungry, I made some mistakes around confusing forgiveness for a sin and a wrongdoing on someone on my staff with feeling like you know, you had to then automatically allow that person to also stay in the organization.
Yeah.
And that was around theft. I mean, I remember one guy, we dealt with all this internally, you know, he repented of it, he stole money, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually never even told the president of the organization until he found out later. That was a huge mistake. It was like, okay, yes, I could go through principles of him repenting, me forgiving, and then going toward reconciliation and restoration.
Right, right.
But that doesn't mean you keep your job over it. So, so I think I learned some things there where, you know, there are just, sometimes you have to make decisions organizationally by letting people go, even though they've repented of their mistake. Yeah,
You know, if a younger leader comes to you, I'm sure they have, and said, help me, give me some advice. How can I be a better leader? You know, especially someone who's younger. How can I be a better leader, prepare for the future? What would you tell them?
I would first ask them to look at, you know, what's their personality type. So do they know Enneagram? Do they know Myers-Briggs? Do they know whatever? And there's all these widgets, so many of them. And then, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how does that personality type function the best as a leader? You know, and then look at those things and read up on that. So I'd say that's one. Number two is really going back to the Lord continually for the decisions that that person's making. You know, not just assuming, oh, I know all this stuff, I'm good, you know, just checking in, praying over meals, and that's it, you know. But really sort of saying, Lord, I tell me what you want me to know and tell me what you want me to do. You know, just being really open to the Lord's direction and allowing the Holy Spirit to guide. So I say that's another thing. And then the other thing is really talk to the people that they're currently leading, even if it's informally, and actually ask them for some really, really frank and transparent feedback. Say, I really want it. You know, be gentle, but tell me the truth, and then learn from that. And then the last is find a good mentor and a coach, someone that can really help them. You know, someone they see as being a good leader, you know, has the right strengths, is really focusing on those strengths, and is actually also acknowledging their weaknesses. So finding someone who can coach them well.
Now, you have mentioned mentoring a few times in the last 15 minutes. So I know that's your heart. Do you have examples of people who have mentored you? Or do you feel like you were missing that, and because of that, you weren't able to mentor to others?
It's a great question, Larry. I do feel like I didn't have enough mentors. Yeah. You know, I had one or two. And because we traveled and moved so often, I mean, we moved 10 times in our 35 years of marriage. So the longest we stayed anywhere was 9 years. And most, on average, we were moving every 3 to 4 years.
And that moving wasn't to the next town. No, that was off into another country, right?
That was other countries, other parts of the United States. So I think that disrupted the ability to really have these long-term relationships, because I think mentoring often does work best through kind of a long-term relationship. Now, you can do spot mentoring, too.
Sure.
So to answer your question, I don't feel like I had enough. I wish I had more. So that would be my advice to people listening to this podcast is, and I know a lot of young people do this now. They're all looking for mentors. It's so awesome. Yeah, the other thing was probably a pride issue on my part, even subconsciously, is early on, I probably wasn't even actively looking.
Yeah.
I would say that honestly. Now, having said that, I feel like I was able to invest in so many people that are in key leadership positions all over the world now.
Right.
And I'm still in touch with them. They check back in. I just heard from a guy in Zimbabwe who was on my team there in the teens when I was with World Vision leading a large program. And his name is Archibald, and he's a Zimbabwean. And now he's the country director of CARE in Malawi. And he just wrote a couple of days ago. He said, Dave, that time was so transformational for me. He said, I just want to thank you again for how you mentored me, how you coached all of us. And so such a blessing to hear those stories. And I know you've heard those stories too. And I know you hear them a lot. And it's awesome, you know, to know that we were just trying to follow God and do his will and investing in others. And sometimes good things happen.
Dave, you have so much inside of you. Have you written articles, books, or anything in these things?
I am not a good writer. Well, I am a very good writer, but I'm a lazy writer. So
well, maybe
the quality of my
that.
Writing is very, very good. Unfortunately, I haven't written too much. I actually have one book to my name, but it's very old and it's related to agriculture. It's called Agriculture and Biblical Holism.
Wow.
So it's all around, you know, the theme in the Bible of, you know, how God, created humans really to be involved in agriculture, to really till, to develop, and to steward and take care of. Mm-hmm. It's in Genesis when God put Adam in the garden. So I wrote on that. And then I've written a lot of articles when I was president. You know, I had a blog, so I've done a lot of blogging and all of that. I'm not doing tons anymore now in this stage of my life,
And there are seasons for everything.
Yeah.
But I'm going to challenge you to ask God about writing, because you have so much inside you. I think would help thousands and millions of people around the world because you touched all these lives and you're coming from a cross-cultural perspective.
Yeah.
Many people, they can teach on mentoring or they can teach in leadership, and it's great, but it's probably from one culture they've experienced.
Right.
You have all these cultures. Last question I have for you, might be the last, we'll see what else comes up, but at this point, is there anything else you want our listeners to know about leadership? Here's your opportunity to share whatever you want.
Yeah.
Anything else that you would love people around the world who are listening right now to know about leadership?
Yeah, two things. I'd like to drill back to what I said or drill down to some of the summary conclusions. The first is really everyone's a leader.
Yeah.
If you know, most people think about leadership, I don't have a C-suite title. You know, I'm not a CFO or a CEO or a COO. Or I'm not this or that, but they're informally a leader.
That's
even if you out there listening are not in a formal position of leadership, you lead informally. So take those informal leadership roles seriously, those responsibilities, and you know, you will have opportunities to bless others, to mentor others, to help others grow. And God might give you really a gift and a skill to be able to mentor and coach others, even if it's in informal ways. So that's number one. The second thing is I'm a big cyclist. And in cycling, professional cycling, the team works in a way where you have to go super fast. There's a saying in Africa that if you want to go far, you go alone. If you want to go, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. In cycling, the beauty of the cycling world, professional cycling, where you cycle in a group, you have a team sport, is if you want to go far and fast, you go together, because you need someone up in front who's breaking the wind, and then other people draft behind. So you're expending like 30 to 40% less energy to be behind the person in front.
Right.
But the person in front gets tired, so they have to pull off and go to the back. Someone else takes the front. And I really think the key to unlocking great leadership is to do it in teams, where someone takes a chance at the front, and then they go to the back and they recover. And guess what? They're back in the front again.
Right.
I was once a president. I'm now a vice president. I was actually a president. And then I went down to a director position just because I feel like, you know, there's times to be at the front pulling.
Yes.
And there's times to be drafting behind others. And that's a great also a principle of leadership. Yeah.
Dave, this has been excellent. Thank you so much. And everybody listening today, check out the show notes. You can find out more about Dave's, and we'll put on everything you have that, you know, would be applicable for people to grow in leadership. Any books you recommend or anything, we'll put on there. And I'm glad you wrote a book, but I hope you write some more. There's
Thank
so
you.
Much in you that I feel like so many people need to hear would help them. Because you're coming with experience. It's not just good ideas. You've lived it, and you're coming with the experience. Anything else you want to share before we close?
No, coming from you, Larry, I will take that seriously and pray about it. I really thank you for that challenge.
And again, if God tells you to do it, you know, obviously we all know it needs to be the Lord in that. So again, everyone, thank you for joining us for the Larry Kerner Leadership Podcast today. We try to find these small things we can change and make a major difference. If we obey God in small things, we'll see a major difference happen down the road. And to check out the show notes, and we'll look forward to having you back with us in the future on the Larry Kerner Leadership Podcast. And again, Dave, thank you for joining me and for being here.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
God bless you all.
Thank you for listening to Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. If you want more information about any of Larry's books, daily devotionals, small group resources, or any other teachings, go to LarryKreider.com.